Good day. This is Mike McAllister, a.k.a. DJ Mike from KSJD Radio, and I have a real treat for our friends in the KSJD community today. We have on the phone today the legendary Betty Levette to talk about her latest album, Blackbirds. Welcome to the show, Betty.
Oh, thank you, Mike. I'm glad to be with you.
Love that you took time to talk to us. Let me begin by saying you are loved by our DJs and our listeners, in no small part due to the knockout performance you put on at the 2008 Telluride Jazz Fest, a festival that many of our listeners go to. This year, you were inducted into the Blues Hall of Fame. Unfortunately, that ceremony was canceled due to COVID.
That yeah? First week in May, I was supposed to be inducted into the Blues Hall of Fame.
Yeah.
I won Rhythm and Blues Award, all that was supposed to happen at the same program. I was supposed to do the New Orleans Jazz Fest, and the new album was supposed to come out. Instead, we got the pandemic.
Yeah. Well, what I hear is that was postponed till next spring at this point, and so we're looking forward to that for sure. And of course, now you have a highly anticipated album entitled Blackbirds, due for release August 28th, and of course available anywhere to purchase or stream. And my first question, Betty, is how did you come up with the title, and what is the meaning behind the title of the album, Blackbirds?
Well, it's kind of convoluted. I wanted to pay tribute to all of these women. This is the bridge I came across on. The first rhythm and blues singers that I ever heard in my life, or that anyone ever heard in their lives, because before that, they were either considered blues singers or later on maybe pop singers or whatever, but rhythm and blues made its advent during these women's careers. And I consider myself a rhythm and blues singer. No matter what I'm entitled, I always say I'm a rhythm and blues singer. I've studied enough to be able to apply this rhythm and blues voice to any kind of song, but it will still be sung with a rhythm and blues voice. And these women were where I got that voice from. And the title came from the fact that Paul McCartney, in his Blackbirds, is singing about a black girl singing. Now, I've heard several stories about it, but my favorite one is that he was cutting through a park, coming from a gig one night, going through the park to smoke a joint, and there was a black girl standing on a table and just singing at the top of her lungs. And he was singing about her, and I am her. And when I had the first opportunity to sing Blackbirds at the Rose Bowl, the words are exactly what has happened to me. I taught my own self how to fly. I taught my own self how to see. And while he had the insight to realize that that was what a black singer would go through, I've gone through it. And I thought that it would just be an appropriate title because I know what all of these women on the album, all their songs, Nina Simone, Dinah Washington, I know what they endured and what they went through to get to wherever they were fortunate enough to finally get to. So that's how the title came about. Usually people say, like, with all these women, how did the Beatles tune get involved?
Well, that's awesome, Betty. Thank you for that insight into the title. Now, of course, yes, the album is inspired by 1950s era covers of black female artists. Nina Simone, Dinah Washington, as you mentioned. You also just recently released Strange Fruit, which was originally performed by Billie Holiday. Some of the other artists on there, Nancy Wilson, Sharon Robinson, Della Reese, Ruth Brown, Little Green, and of course the Beatles at the very end of the album. Betty, I got a chance to listen to the album, and I was curious, what inspired you to choose some of the songs that you chose? You could pick one.
Tell me what you thought.
Huh?
How are you going to say, Betty, I had a chance to listen to the album? Tell me what you thought.
I absolutely loved it. And I was really struck by the way you rearranged the songs so masterfully, which is another question I have for you. But how did you choose some of those songs, like the one by Lil Green and Sharon Robinson, who wrote with Leonard Cohen for many years?
I was really, really excited about hearing Lil Green. She just sounded like the sweetest little woman. She was like, in the dark. And I just thought it was so cute. And I was so proud of her. And, you know, writing a song that everybody in the world has recorded. And I don't even know how the woman looked. I mean, I just imagine her being a little woman and writing this big song. And that's why I chose that one. And, of course, I've heard everyone I've ever admired sing it. And the Nancy Wilson song, when I first left home, I fell in love with this guy who ran an after-hour joint, and I lived in the after-hour joint for the first 6 months of, well, it wasn't my career because I hadn't started singing, but people were coming in that I was meeting, and the jukebox was constantly playing, and this song, Save Your Love For Me, had just come out on Nancy. Nancy had pretty much just come out, and I was very proud of myself that I could sing this ballad, which I'd never sung a ballad before in my life. So when I first started to sing, 6 months later, I said, I know a ballad. And it was the only one I knew for quite some time. And then I met a manager who told me I had to learn to sing. So.
And you got your...
But each one of the songs have a different place in my heart. My manager at the time, who I always say it made the woman you see standing before you now, he was a musician in the 40s in a big band, and he was the assistant to the president of the Musicians Union in Detroit when he acquired, or when he was plagued with me. But it was just like having any other teenager. The fact that I sung did not keep him from having to, you will practice, you will learn these songs. And I was like, nobody wants to hear Sweet Georgia Brown, which is what got me to lead role in Bubbling Brown Sugar. He was just a taskmaster. And I remember telling him one night, he would go on and on about Sarah Vaughan. We were on the freeway. And I said, Sarah Vaughan ain't that great. He stopped the car and put me out. It was 2 o'clock in the morning. He said, you do not even have sense enough to ride. That's so demeaning. I mean, you ain't got sense enough to ride. Oh. But he went through it and made me, said, you may never become a star, but if you will learn all these tunes and listen to me, you are a good singer and you can become a great singer and you will be able to sing until you die. And it will only get better, even if you never become the last word on the radio or whatever. And that was hard for me to accept then. I'm in Detroit and all of my friends are stars, you know, on the television and on the radio. So he had a hard time getting me to this album, which, although he's dead now, this would have killed him. Being on Verve and doing these tunes, this would have killed him.
Oh.
For sure.
Wow, Betty, that's an amazing story. Thank you so much for that. My next question, I wanted to say that you are a masterful interpreter of songs. That is one of your true talents. You have a skillful way of making any song a true Betty LeVette song. When I listen to the album from the a cappella intro, Book of Lies by Ruth Brown, The deeply emotional rendition of I Hold No Grudge by Nina Simone, it really just sounds like your song, like you wrote it. And then you took the Beatles tune and you rearranged it in an incredible way to make it your own. What is your process that you use to make songs your own?
Well, think about how difficult it would be for me to sound like these people and to sing to a Beatles arrangement. I mean, it's almost resorting to my own, not making it my own. It's like, if I want to sing the song, I have to find somewhere that I can go in it, and I can't go the same place that all these other people went, which was what I kept misunderstanding with Jim. I thought he wanted me to sound like Sarah Vaughan, and I knew I couldn't sound like that. But the idea was find you in the song. And at this point, now, I don't even think about the person that's singing the song. I listen to the song, write down the lyrics, get with my keyboard player. He plays the actual notes of the song. And then I can do whatever I want to do with them and go wherever the words send me. Just like if they had brought it to me before they brought it to them. When they first heard it, they didn't have a way to go. They made their own way. And that is what I do. People are, that's the question I think I'm asked most often. What is the process of you? It's not a process. I can't sound like Lil Green. So I have to sing it the way it comes out of my mouth. I'm fortunate enough to have a producer in Steve Jordan who understands every word I'm saying and how I want to do it. When we did the Bob Dylan album, this last album, before this one, you know, what are you going to, what would you do with a Bob Dylan tune? You need to sit on a stool, learn to play guitar and sing it like he sung it, or you can listen to the lyrics and pick a song that you can find some meaning in for you and tell it the way you would tell it. In the case of Bob Dylan, it was like finishing his arguments because he had a complaint about every damn thing in the world. So all I had to do was complete his arguments. But in these songs here, these were the women that I wanted to grow up to be like. And this was almost a celebration. And like, look, girls, I found me a way of my own.
Well, that is incredible. And you are truly a unique talent, Betty. You are one of a kind, no doubt. Well, Betty, I wanted to talk a little about your career. You started at the young age of 16 years old, and you had your share of ups and downs over the years, but it was in 2003 that you really came into your own with the album A Woman Like Me. As you've said, it marked the beginning of the second phase of your career. Since then, you have garnered more awards than I can possibly list here. It 5 Grammy nominations, 5 Blues Award nominations, just an endless list.
I had to garner them up fast because I hadn't ever won any before. So I had to gang up a whole bunch of them.
And I must say, you deserve everything that you're getting. And then this year, you were inducted into the Blues Hall of Fame. What an honor. Mm-hmm. And I'm curious, though, it wasn't always so wonderful and all roses for you in your professional career. And what kept you going through all the ups and downs over the years?
Well, for one thing, I don't know how to do anything else. And I would, and certainly not as proficiently as I can sing. If I had gone to school and at least studied another kind of craft or something, if I could count as well as I could sing. But I don't know how to do anything else this proficient. And so now I would be embarrassed to not be able to do something as well as I can do this. And because this is favored by so many, there's always someone to help you, even if you can't, you know, do everything you're trying to do. But it seems like 12 years ago, because I started so young, so many people in Europe, all over the world, who were like, the first time I heard you, I was 16 or 17, and nobody knew about you but me. And then all of my friends in Detroit became big stars. It was like, but I still have this record by you. And all these people have gotten in position now so that they can help me. And then, of course, with the internet. But there were all kinds of reasons to hold on. I never had an audience get up and leave. I never had a record company say, well, we're letting you go because you aren't good. No one has ever said you aren't good or you should give this up. People have offered all kinds of things. They've like, here, you can live at my house until this, or you can use my car, or it has always been this. I've not had a situation where some man was beating me and I had to live in a car. None of that has happened. It has been the people who really believed in me who've always reached out to help and to save me. They believed in me, and they eventually made me believe in myself to the point where I felt like, hey, bring them on. I can handle it. But that even wasn't always like that. I used to lose my voice. If I had a three-night gig, I'd do maybe two and a half nights, and then I'd lose my voice out of insecurity and out of staying up all night and running my mouth too much.
Oh, that is wonderful. We are so happy that you did stick with it and for all those years, because, boy, has it paid off. And the music you're releasing now.
I'm so glad that y'all stuck with me.
Oh, of course. Of course. Well, Betty, you've now released three songs from the album as singles. And I wanted to ask you, your second single to release was Strange Fruit. And that was, of course, during the turmoil in the wake of the George Floyd death. What are your feelings about that incident and the Black Lives Matter movement?
Well, Strange Fruit was supposed to be, I think, the third or fourth one. But when they stopped saying unarmed black man killed by cops and started saying lynched, I believe I just recorded a tune about such a thing. And I said, I checked with all of the people I respect, because I didn't want to seem like I was jumping on something and trying to cash in on it. I said, but the thing that's awful here is that 2 weeks ago, this song was an old song by one of the other old singers. And now it's become timely. And I said, it was already recorded, we'd already done it. And it has actually, and unfortunately, become timely. So it being here for as long as I have, I certainly, and in doing interviews, especially, I've been doing just the hundreds of interviews, and doing interviews, especially with whites, I've been trying to explain that this has all been going on, but there's no way I could have been the pictures you've seen and the person you've met if this was all I thought about. Uh-huh. You know, this can't be all I thought about. I will say this too. This time, it seems so different to me. It seems so different than the 60s and the 70s. This seems so different. I am a pessimistic optimist, but I really believe, I don't believe it's happening right this minute, but I believe that there are rumblings going on that are changing. This is changing tremendously. First of all, we've got more black millionaires than we've ever had. This is changing tremendously. And it's changing rapidly now. And the fact that this pandemic has happened, the good things that have happened out of it are tremendous. It's a horrible thing that has happened, but it has made people stop where you may walk through your house and see the news once a day if you're working and busy, You sing it three times a day now. You're knowing more things. You're listening to more things. This is very good for my album because of what it is. It isn't a thing where people who just, what's the newest thing, you know, would maybe take time to sit and listen to. But these tunes are so well crafted, and they mean so much. And the women that did them, they went through so much to hold on and to get to here. And that's where they are. They're still here. If I have a record coming out with their songs on it, they're here. And I just think that so many things are happening, so many good things, although this horrible thing is happening. You know, I keep repeating the president of Verve. He said, he told his wife, you know, I really like you. You know, I did. That's simple, but it's just, you know, I get it. You know, and unfortunately, there'll be some people saying, I have no idea how long I've. How come I've been here with you this long? I really hate you. So it's done a lot of different things. People watching their kids grow, and especially like 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, and 6, they grow like by the 30 minutes. You know, they're getting a chance to see this. Something they've never seen before and would not have seen because they have to keep those damn jobs to take care of those kids.
Yeah.
But now they're seeing them, they're watching them. A whole bunch of good things are happening. But it's happening in a bad, bad situation.
Yeah. Well, thank you for that insight, Betty, and your viewpoint on that. It contains a lot of wisdom, I think, and I thank you. In fact, I would like to sincerely thank you for myself and the KSJD community for taking the time to share your voice, your insight, and your talents with us today. You are truly a living legend, Betty, and I have great excitement upon hearing your new album, and I know our listeners are really excited to hear it. Again, that comes out August 28th. It's called Blackbirds, and it features great cover songs of 1950s black female artists. And thank you so much.
Yes, thank you so, so much for your help. This is your time, too, you know. And that's the only thing you ask for on your deathbed, more time.
That's right.
So when you give somebody some of it, it's really quite a gift. And I appreciate it so much, and you spreading it amongst your listeners, and thank them so much. I can't wait to get back there. If you came from the East Coast or anywhere here, you know, when you're in Colorado, it takes you about a day to close your mouth.
Yeah.
You're looking at all the mountains and whatever, so it takes a moment. But I thank you so much, and your listeners, thank them for me, and I'm so glad you like the album. Thank you for talking with me.
Of course. You are most welcome. Most welcome.
Well, and when I get a chance to see you soon, let me know you're there. I'm with you.
That would be great. I would look forward to that. Absolutely.
Okay.
Thank you so much, Betty.
Thank you, baby.
All right. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.